Have you ever wondered how someone you admire became successful in their professional life, but also in their personal life? What does it take to become not only an outstanding leader, but an outstanding person? Welcome to Season 2 of Leaders Unplugged, a show that explores professional and personal leadership through conversations with leaders, regardless of where they are in their career. I'm Nicole Boivin. Ava Hill is the chief of the Six Nations of the Grand River Reserve, the biggest reserve population-wise in Canada. Chief Hill is one of 40 female chiefs out of 133 in Ontario. She has extensive experience working with many First Nations and Aboriginal organizations locally, regionally, and nationally. We met with Chief Hill in her office on the reserve. We are at the Six Nations of the Grand River Reserve with Chief Ava Hill. Hello, Chief Hill.
Sego, it's gonna go okay?
Oh.
And that means hello, how are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good.
It's a beautiful day out there, and I understand we're on the biggest reserve of Canada.
Yes, it is the biggest population-wise. Not the biggest land mass, but okay. It is the biggest population-wise.
Oh, how many are you?
27,000.
And how does it compare with the second one? Second biggest one.
Oh, I don't know. Second biggest one's probably in the teens, 15,000 or
really?
Something maybe.
So that's quite a job. It's quite a big reserve. So it's a big job to be chief here.
It is. Although all the people don't live here because we don't have enough space for one thing. We have about 16,000 live in the community and the other live spread throughout the country, the province, and around the world actually.
So how do you keep in touch?
Well, we don't keep in touch. I mean, it's good that there's, I guess, social media. Maybe one good thing about social media is that people can keep in touch that way. They keep in touch through their families, I think. And then we have one big event here in May, and a lot of people come home for it. They'll come home for different events.
So what happens in May? What kind of event is
it? It's called Bread and Cheese. And it's celebrated on Queen Victoria's birthday, and because we were allies to the British when Queen Victoria was reigning, that she promised gifts to us every year on her birthday. And it's a tradition that we've carried on, and it's a big celebration, one of the biggest, actually, in our community. And everybody lines up. We have a parade, and everybody lines up, and they get a hunk of cheese and a big slice of bread. So what we host a number of events in our community. It's a busy, busy community. We've got so many high-profile people here. And one of them is Robbie Robertson. He is from here. He never lived here, but his mom was from here, and he used to come and visit when he was young, and he still has family here. And he recently got his status card last fall, and so he said he'd come home and get it, and we had a big celebration. We presented him with a Lifetime Achievement Award. And it was so exciting that he came back.
No kidding, I'm a huge fan.
Oh, the band? Yeah, I remember going to see the band back in those hippie days when the last waltz first came out.
Wow. Yeah. I think we're dating ourselves.
Yeah. But it was so exciting to meet him, and he came spent some time, and he said he's a lovely person, and now he brought his daughter with him. And he said he's going to come back to the bush. That's what we all call it when we move away. Let's go back to the bush.
Yeah.
And he's going to bring his son and his grandchildren. And we had a good event. And he didn't sing because he doesn't perform anymore.
No.
But we presented him the Lifetime Achievement Award. And a lot of our performers here sang in front of him. You could tell they were nervous.
Oh, I guess.
But he stood up and gave every one of them a standing ovation.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful thing for us. Yeah, and we like doing that kind of thing, recognizing. And just at our Bread and Cheese as well, we presented a plaque of recognition to Brandon Montour, who's a young man. Mm-hmm. He plays for the Anaheim Ducks in the National Hockey League. He just came and got it, and I said, "Do you want some bread and cheese?" "No, I can't eat that stuff. I'm in training."
Discipline.
Yeah.
You learn discipline.
Yeah, and he's a role model for those young guys. Like, he made it, others can make it.
Yes. So is there a lot of partnership or interface with the other reserves?
Yes. Like in Ontario, there's 133 reserves.
I didn't realize there were so
First
many.
Nations. And across the country, there's 633. Oh. And we come together regularly on a Chiefs of Ontario assembly. Usually twice a year, we'll get together as all chiefs. In fact, and then there's another session going on this week I have to attend, which all the chiefs will be at. And then nationally, we come together under the Assembly of First Nations. usually twice a year, too. We're coming together in Vancouver in July, all of the chiefs in the country, to elect a new national chief. And then the one in June is they'll be electing a regional chief, Ontario regional chief.
And I understand you're running for that.
Yes, I've submitted my name to be a candidate.
And how many candidates are there?
Six.
Okay, and how many are women?
Two.
Okay. Has there been a female chief before?
Not in Ontario, no.
Not in Ontario. So that would be a first if one of you got in. And how, understand the election, it's quite different.
The Ontario regional chief election is more traditional. And what you do is it's not secret ballot. We get nominated the first day, and then the second day we get to make speeches. And then we line up, and the chiefs will stand behind their candidate of choice.
So how do you get ready for that, for an election like that?
Well, we're running around doing the same campaigning and talking to people, the same as we have to others. You know, I've been to a number of assemblies. I was up in Timmins talking to the Anishinaabe Nation chiefs. Those are in the more northern part, and they've come together under that organization. Mm-hmm. And then in Kenora, Fort Frances area, they come together on Grand Council Treaty Number 3, and I was up there as well. And last week I was in Thunder Bay for the Anishinaabek Assembly. And then tomorrow I'm going to the Oneida Reserve, which is near London, to meet with another group, which are Association of Iroquois and Allied Indians.
And who do you meet with when you go?
The chiefs.
The chiefs themselves.
Well,
they're the ones that are going to be voting.
They do is they give us an opportunity to stand up and present our platform. And then I can hang around there all day and talk to as many chiefs as I can one-on-one. Mm-hmm.
And what is it about your platform that's different?
Well, I'm trying to do is empower the chiefs, and like you know, they're the rights holders. We've got these organizations like the Assembly of First Nations who, you know, are based in Ottawa, and the government seems to run to them for all of their consultation. And I'm saying you got to start coming back to the communities. This is where things are happening, is in the community level. So we're trying to empower and be more inclusive, to include the chiefs in what's going on. That's mainly what I want to do, and I know that because I worked at the Chiefs of Ontario office. There is the secretariat office for the chiefs. I was the executive director there for years. I worked at the Assembly of First Nations. I was the executive assistant to a national chief there for 6 years. So I know how they're supposed to work, and what they are is advocacy offices. And the other thing I'm going on is to open the door for chiefs so that they can get in the door and meet directly with people in both the federal and provincial government to help settle whatever issues. And then the other thing is to try to bring the chiefs together on a collective issue and make sure that they feel that they're included in the decision-making that's going on.
And how's that resonating?
Seems to be going pretty good. You know, I'm going based on my own experience having worked in those two places, plus as of having been a chief here for so many years. And prior to that, I was a counselor for 9 years.
So they know you.
Yeah.
They know what you stand for.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
It should be interesting. So you've been chief for how long now?
I 4.5 years. My second term.
Yes. And how do you become a chief?
Get elected. See, we still have a traditional system here, too. But we also have the elected system, which only started in 1924. And we've been having elections ever since. So I got elected by the community.
So when you said you still have a traditional system, what does that mean?
Well, we have the Iroquois Confederacy, or the Haudenosaunee Confederacy Chiefs, which was our traditional form of governments before the Indian Act was in place and before elected systems were put in place.
So you've been at this for a while. You worked, as you've mentioned, on the ED side, executive director side. You've been a council, on council. You've been a chief for 2 terms. Did you ever think you would be in these types of positions?
Never. No, never. When I was growing up, I was shy, but nobody believes that now. I told them I was, and then that, I never ever expected I would be a chief of Six Nations. In fact, I was living out west for a while in Saskatchewan, and I came home, and I was working for the chief. I was his executive assistant. Like, I've always kind of been behind the scenes.
Okay.
I was the executive director, Chiefs of Ontario. I was executive assistant to the national chief at the Assembly of First Nations, who he then went on to become the co-chair of the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples, and I was his EA there. Mm. And then I went out west for a while, and when I came home, I was the executive assistant to the chief at Six Nations. And, always behind the scenes, I guess, listening and learning. And figuring, why didn't you say this? Why didn't you do that?
Uh-huh.
And, so I figured, what the hell? I might as well throw my hat in the ring and put forth my own concerns.
Yes. And that's worked, obviously worked out well for
you. Well, in 2000, I think it was 2003. It's so long ago, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
But I was a counselor for 9 years. I got reelected twice for 3 terms. And then I, then last, when I decided to run for chief, it was because people had wanted me to. Plus, I had that experience being a counselor for three terms or 9 years and knew how things were going. So I did, and I ran against, I think it was 4 men, including the incumbent. And I won by 2 votes.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, 2 votes. And then I ran again. So I served 3 years, and then I ran for re-election against 2 people.
Okay.
And then I got re-elected.
Have you always lived on reserve?
No. I was born here, just down the street. There used to be a hospital there. I left when I was 18. And I went to Big Bad Toronto. Oh,
did you?
And then I left there, and I went up to...
How long were you there?
In Toronto? Mm-hmm. I was there about 4 years, I guess.
And what were you doing there? Why did you leave?
I was working for Indian Affairs.
Okay.
The dreaded Indian Affairs.
Okay.
I left. I got offered a job at the Indian Affairs office in Ottawa, so... And so away I went. And then I was up there for a while, and then eventually ended up back in Toronto, still working for the federal government. And then from there was when I went into the Chiefs of Ontario office. I went in initially as the assistant at the Chiefs of Ontario, and then eventually became the executive director.
How was that for you, going from the reserve and going to a big city? And
well, it was pretty, it was exciting. It was a long time ago. It was 1969.
Yes.
It was the days of the hippies in the village.
Oh, my gosh. It was exciting.
It was exciting. I went with a friend of mine from here, and we lived in little rooming houses. And we had no place to live when we went there. We just went there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we ended up in a rooming house, a home for girls for a couple of nights. And then we got a rooming house until we finally, were able to get settled. And we said we weren't going to come home for 2 weeks, which we didn't, but it was the longest two weeks, I think. But we stuck it out, and, I had my own space then. So it was okay. And then, anyway, I went from there to Ottawa and then back to Toronto.
What did you miss most when you weren't here on the reserve?
When
you were outside of your community.
I miss my family.
Yes.
Because all my family was still here.
Yes.
Yeah. They were all still here. They are all still here. None of them have, one brother moved away, but all the rest have always been here all my life. And so then, it became a place for them to go and visit too.
Oh, so it was good for them.
Yeah, it was good for them too. And then it was good for us when they went to come home.
Okay. So what did you do after that?
Where am I? Back in Toronto.
This woman has been around.
I came back to Toronto. Oh, and then I was working for the Chiefs of Ontario as the executive director. And then, we got involved in 1985 in supporting a candidate for the national chief, and the candidate we supported and ended up winning, and then he offered me the job as his executive assistant, so I went back to Ottawa. And then he eventually became the co-chair of the Royal Commission on Aboriginal People, so I went there with him too for a while. And then I didn't stay there for the duration of that. I moved out to Saskatchewan. I was living on a Dakota reserve out there with a man that I met and fell in love with. Who's still out there? He's out there, I'm here, but we're still in love with each other.
Oh, nice.
So everybody, I said, it's perfect. He's 1,000 miles apart.
The perfect relationship.
And so I went out there. I left the Royal Commission. I went out there with him, lived with him for about 4 years. And then I came home because I wanted my own, came back home and I wanted my own house in my own community.
So how long ago was that?
That I came back?
Yeah.
I came back in 1995.
Okay. So long. Talk about managing a long-distance relationship for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So what's the secret?
I don't know. I guess the secret is that we love each other and trust each other.
Yes.
I think trust is the biggest thing. You know, like I go out there sometimes. Sometimes he comes here. Sometimes we meet in Las Vegas.
Why not? Yeah. So how often do you see each other?
Well, usually about once a month.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Do you have any children?
I have one daughter. Yeah.
Okay.
She lives in Ottawa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Grandchildren?
No grandchildren. She's threatened me that I'm not going to have any.
Oh.
I've got nieces and nephews, but I know she's still young enough to have some, I guess. But yeah, my daughter and I are very close. Like, we're like best friends.
What are you most proud of so far in your career?
One of the things we were working on as a chief is, you know, with the hydro bills.
Oh,
everybody's
yes.
bill, hydro bills were so high, and people were coming in here. So much so that my assistant was just getting inundated with community members complaining about their hydro bills. So I started going after Hydro One. And eventually I had to move her out and create a whole new community liaison position to deal with community members. And continue to go to the Ministry of Energy and Hydro One and say, we got to do something about this. Like, some of our people don't know whether they pay their hydro bills or buy food. That's how bad it was. And so Hydro One then started having staff coming here and sitting down one-on-one with individual community members to try and work out their bills, whether it could be reduced or anything, or some kind of a payment plan that was more suitable to them. And that's still going on. That started about 3-4 years ago, and it's still happening. And now it's expanded to other communities. And I'll never forget the day when Minister Thibault was going to make the announcement of the Ontario Fair Hydro Plan. And he asked to meet with me before he made his announcement. And so the regional chief, myself, and then Gord Peters and I met with him, and he just came in and he said, the delivery charge is gone for on-reserve residents.
Wow.
So for every First Nation resident in Ontario living on a reserve, they don't pay that delivery charge anymore.
So the role that you played out of this reserve had an impact for all the reserves in Ontario.
Yeah.
That is something to be proud of.
It is. Yeah, it is. I've done a lot of work, as I said, as well with the young people in sports, and those are other things I really enjoy.
And what are you seeing? Are there trends? Are there things that worry you about what's happening with young people?
Oh, yeah. And that's why I concentrate on sports, because the drugs are everywhere. You know, we've had our share of suicides and bullying and violence in our community. And whenever anything happens here, I always used to think, oh, my God, it's just happening here. But it's happening everywhere. It's happening in other reserves, at the communities, and it's happening in all around, even surrounding towns and villages, municipalities. And I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, nobody knows the answer. And I think we're all struggling to find what are those answers to get those, particularly the young people, on the right path. And so that's why we try to get so much programming and sporting events for them to and encourage them. And we recognize them for any achievements they make at our council and try to build them up and let them know that there's a better way. And we're very sports-minded because we're lacrosse central, I think.
Yes, you have quite a reputation for that.
We've got little wee ones we've got minor lacrosse, the little kids are, some of them are born holding lacrosse sticks. So, and we got to keep them busy, and I think it's good. And we've got a lot of role models, too, that they look up to.
That's important.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself 5-10 years from now?
Retired.
Okay.
Probably sitting on some committees and some boards.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll work anymore. I mean, maybe if I do, it would be just like a short-term contract. And trying to still help, I guess, as where I can, but not in positions that are so stressful.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for young emerging leaders? Other than do sports.
Well, what I would tell them, and I was just at one of our schools the other day, and they have this little Wee Stand Club, which are part of the whole Wee Day thing. And I told the kids, I said, networking is very important. Networking has done a lot of good for me. And networking, I said, you never know where these people you meet are going to end up. I'll give you an example. When the Liberal government federally was in the opposition, I'm a big proponent of doing advocacy work both at Parliament Hill and at Queen's Park and getting to know the members. And so I think it was when Bob Bray was the interim leader.
Yes, yes.
I had and Carolyn Bennett was the Aboriginal Affairs critic, and I invited her down. And initially it had started, but we did a little lobby or a little advocacy work, and we met with as many members as we could. And we met this one lady from Etobicoke, Kirsty Duncan. So I invited her down because she's a wonderful woman, eh? Wonderful. Like her and I became good friends, and Carolyn Bennett. And so Bob wanted to come. So we said, okay, bring Bob. So the three of them were here. They came here, and they were all opposition then, eh? And well, now I'm working on the Canada Summer Games. We've got Canada Summer Games to agree to have lacrosse be one of the sports played in the 2021 Canada Summer Games, and we're a partner with them.
Good.
And they said, well, they agreed, but they said, well, now we need the federal government to come up with the money to bring the teams in, because that's their responsibility. I said, okay, I'll go meet with the federal minister of sport. Well, guess who it is? Kirsty Duncan.
Oh, you're kidding. Wonderful.
Yeah. So I went and met with her, and as I said, she's a good friend of mine. So that's just one story of how networking is important. And that was one piece of advice I gave to the young girls, all the young people. And I said, the other thing is, don't be afraid to ask questions, even if you think they're dumb. One of our counselors was sitting beside me. I said, he does that all the time. All he does is ask dumb questions. And he just laughed. And he said, well, that's how you learn.
It is.
And I said, and the other advice I give to young people is make sure you know what you're talking about. You know, do your reading and your research, so that you know what you're talking about. I said, like in my position, I always laugh and I always say, you have to know a little bit about everything and not a whole hell of a lot about anything.
Being a generalist.
The other thing is team building. Mm-hmm. You know, I read this somewhere and I use it quite often. Is that, a good leader surrounds themselves with smart people.
Yes.
And I lift up my staff all the time and say, these are my smart people, because I couldn't survive without them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right.
Chief Hill's behind-the-scene experience has prepared her for the leadership roles that she has undertaken. She has had an interesting journey working on and off the reserve. Her compassion for her people and her dedication to her community were tangible throughout our conversation. It was an honor to speak with her. I hope that you enjoyed this podcast. And if you want to listen to more conversations like this one, look for Leaders Unplugged at iTunes or Google Play. I also want to thank our producer, José Guimond, and our editor, Graham Harris. Until next time.